Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. As the EU finalizes yet another round of sanctions against Russia, there's a growing awareness among Europeans that Washington stands to gain economically from the West proxy war on Moscow. Western sanctions are punishing Europeans. Is this what the Europeans signed up for? Crosstalking transatlantic tensions, I'm joined by my guest, Pai Ian in Los Angeles. He's a strategic planning consultant, a private equity advisor, and an independent economic analyst. And in Paris, we cross to Jacques Sapir. He is professor emeritus at the School for Advanced Studies in Social Sciences. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Pai, let me go to you in Los Angeles. You got up earliest for the program. We very much appreciate it. I want to start out with this news first here. This price cap on Russian oil that has been sponsored by the G7 and others. What do you assess it to be? Because, you know, this is a commodity that a certain number of countries say they want to control the price on, of one particular producer. Is it going to work? And should Russia be worried? Go ahead, in Los Angeles.
Well, the West is throwing the kitchen sink at Eurasian and West Asian monetary integration, essentially. That's the bottom line. It's not going to be discussed, obviously, in Western press, but those are the underlying stakes. Like, price capping oil is a flaccid Hail Mary pass, to use a football analogy. Just the whole concept of a quote-unquote buyer's cartel dictating price caps against major energy producers shows desperation against losing essentially obsolete monopoly pricing powers from dangerously over-leveraged speculative market centers. I mean, London not insuring Russian energy transport vessels is pointless as well, because Moscow's already arranged for alternative Asian insurers. So this stuff is just optics. Immediately, Russia's going to simply call the West bluff and prohibit crude exports at any price lower than assigned caps, or really at this point at any price that Moscow deems as a floor. Where will this makeup of that cheap Russian oil or natural gas supply come from ultimately? Iran, Venezuela, or the Saudis, all of whom are leaning further eastward anyway? North American gas via sea transport at an obscene price multiple to Russian gas? Any reduced Russian energy supply is going to just boomerang on these set price caps, while Russia simply continues selling energy to inevitable cap defectors who are its longstanding loyal customers anyway. I mean, that's because in contrast to fiat money, oil and natural gas cannot be printed. Neither can gold, silver, platinum, palladium, or any other vital industrial commodities. Hence, momentum is with the East, which sits on these physical commodities. And, these customers of Russia are going to continue to just benefit at presumed discounts while all of Europe freezes to death.
Well, Pai, I want to stay with it just one more second here. Do you see price distortions as a result of this? Because this is what some people are claiming, that the price of oil actually could go much, much higher because of this price cap.
Yes, and that's, you know, because at the core of it, the oil price caps, you're going to see distortions, you're going to see fluctuations. It's going to ultimately benefit the supposed victims of the caps. Because, again, they sit on the commodity itself. The oil price caps are ultimately about beating back rapidly building Eurasian momentum against over a century of transatlantic global monetary standard dominance, be it by the dollar now or by the pound sterling before it. Gold and other vital commodities-backed digital currencies are being introduced by Russia and its close ally China to specifically replace the, at this point, I think nearly half a century old U.S. petrodollar reserve recycling standard, as Russia and China have been hoarding physical gold for this very purpose for years now. Yeah. Coupled against a wider building recession and imminent global sovereign debt crisis, the economic and thus political stakes for the West have never been higher, and hence they're willing to, you know, further continue to sacrifice their own consumer base with out of control inflation, which in turn is dictated by energy prices foremost, which then dictate to all other commodities, agricultural or otherwise, in order to try and buckle this building momentum back east.
Well, Jacques, you're in Paris. I hope it's not getting too cold there. But this is a choice that the Europeans have made here. And they talk about getting through the winter, but not just this winter. There's a huge displacement going on here. Have the Europeans actually thought this out? Because, as Paya said, you know, many countries in the world will buy Russian oil. You know, the Europeans don't have any kind of corner on the market here. Jacques, go ahead in Paris.
Well, actually, I think that the price caps is a kind of measure of desperation from European countries and the G7, of course. Everybody knows that that will not work. Everybody knows that Russia had a lot of time to prepare for this application of price caps and will probably introduce some countermeasures for that. In the end, I think that European countries, EU countries, will not be very, very, they will be very uncomfortable with this kind of measures, which has been proposed mostly for political effects. You know, governments were under pressure to do something, okay, but what they did was something stupid. And now they have to live with the consequences of what they did. So I think that this problem will not be a major problem for Russia, even if it could reduce the volume of some oil export. Yes, that's quite possible. But the major problem will be in EU, and probably oil price will climb up again. You know that right now they are at slightly more than $83 a barrel. I'm talking in Brent, of course. And they could move up to over the 90s or maybe over the 100s in day two cards. And this will again raise a major problem. Another issue is the embargo on diesel oil.
That's right.
You know, on fuel. And that is particularly important because a large part of diesel oil, which was consumed in Europe, was imported from Russia. Now, if you are not importing diesel oil from Russia, price will climb up. Well, and remember,
Jacques, what you're saying here is that, okay, the Europeans will have to import other oil from other countries will be much higher in price while Russia is selling its oil to other countries at a discount, right?
Yes, very probably. It's already what happened with India and China, and mostly India. You know that India is now reselling to Europe, to EU countries, refined products at, of course, the market price, but they got first oil at a discount price. That's very good for Indian refiners, but that's not good for the EU and certainly not for the EU industries.
Okay, but Pai, so what we're going to do is the Indians realized that the Europeans became rich off of cheap, reliable Russian energy. Now they're going to do the same thing, okay? This is not difficult to understand, Pai.
Yeah, the other thing both of you just mentioned, I agree with Jacques, his analysis is, this is like fifth degree, fifth dimension chess, whatever the analogy you want to use, because as the oil price spikes, I don't know, $200 a barrel, and yet India and China and these kind of traditional loyal customers to Russian oil and natural gas benefit from cheaper pricing. All of this will gradually dovetail geopolitically into serving what I mentioned earlier, this Eastern currency play, which seeks to replace the petrodollar standard. It's aimed at doing that in order to make it attractive, showing the dysfunctions of Western staid, obsolete pricing powers, while disabling sanctions at the same time against Russia and her partners, and while inevitably lowering energy prices for these consuming countries, which will then become attractive to Europe, North America, and other parts of the world that are like, what are we doing wrong? Whereas India and Southeast Asia and East Asia are paying such attractive prices and growing as a result and not freezing to death.
And Pai, at the same time, these countries will be buying the oil not in dollars. Very important, not in dollars, correct?
Yes, I mean, that's what's being essentially set up is an alternative that's been in years since the make. I mean, the Chinese were very vocal about it 12 years ago, 2010, to the West saying, look, this is unsustainable to just continue to have a dollar monopoly on pricing of these vital commodities. So gradually, very patiently, they've been putting the mechanisms in place in order to essentially marry oil to gold. I mean, what this is, if you think about it and you know, just it's going to laser torpedo the Death Star center core reactor, exploding the battle station to just to marry gold and oil, two of the most vital, monetary and consumable commodities on the planet. Eurasian gold marrying oil pricing and trading is essentially Toto pulling the green curtain back on the Wizard of Oz while he's yelping, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. The 50-year-old monetary confidence trick established by the Saudis and the Nixon administration with Kissinger spearheading the tactical strategy, all of that is about to get optically overturned, thereby triggering a derivatives crisis that'll bankrupt the largest financial institutions if it's allowed to go to its extreme.
On that gloomy note, Pai, we have to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on transatlantic tensions. Stay with RT.
Пулевое на вылет.
Я делаю все для того, чтобы максимально обезопасить и довести их живыми.
Поехали. Уходим, уходим, уходим.
Я запереживала, конечно, что нас засекли, что именно били, потому что мы там ходили. Но ребята говорят, нет, слава богу, а то они бы ложили бы. Обошлось.
Орудие!
Выстрел!
В 2014 году автобус с горловскими беженцами расстреляли, сожгли. Там были мои дети, но они чудом выжили. Ну вот, ну, любой бы на моем месте пошел бы, наверное.
Тогда я помогу.
Да.
А стой ты, стой. Давайте быстро.
Да, спасибо.
Маленький, иди сюда, сынок.
Огневую позицию занять.
Наводите.
По цели готов.
Поехали.
Каждый раз получаю удовольствие, потому что с каждым моим выстрелом приближается время наших побед.
Конечно, страшно. Но я уже приняла решение. Я здесь. Бывает такое, что нервы сдают, хочется поплакать. Нельзя это показывать. Мне нужно, чтобы ребята шли в бой с настроением, с сильным духом. Да, я рискую жизнью, но у меня есть цель. Если мы это сейчас не закончим, будет хуже. Мы должны победить.
We need to counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly, all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
А у нас ни воды, ни хлеба, вообще ничего.
Здесь продуктовые наборы, здесь есть все.
Обстреливают еще нацики, понимаешь?
Азовцы, если находили московские телефоны или что, убивали в хлам.
Нацики отходили, просто заливали бензином с канистр, подпаливали и уходили.
Люди очень боятся, чтобы сюда назад не вернулась Украина.
Детей можете отдельно собрать, сейчас закончим, сладкая роган.
Главный принцип – все, что собирают люди в России, донести непосредственно в руки нуждающимся здесь, на территории Донбасса.
Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing transatlantic tensions. Okay, let's go back to Jacques in Paris here. The French President Macron was visiting the United States on a state visit, and he kind of meekishly pointed out to Biden that what the U.S. administration is doing vis-a-vis Europe is, well, very, very painful. The Inflation Reduction Act, obviously misnamed, but it's beginning to pinch now. It's really beginning to pinch that the Americans are really damaging the European economy to the point. What I've been saying over the last few months with my guests is that the deindustrialization of Europe, it's real. Go ahead, in Paris.
Yes, it's certainly real. Of course, President Macron has focused on the Inflation Reduction Act and its protectionist content. But the main problem is the fact that with higher energy price in Europe, and higher energy price will stay with us for years, because just, you know, changing from gasoline gas onto LNG gas is to increase the cost of energy by 30 to 50%. So the problem of deindustrialization because of higher costs in energy is a very, very real question. And the problem is not just the Inflation Reduction Act. Of course, it's a protectionist act by the United States. But by the way, it's not the first time the United States are doing that. And we don't have to be so much surprised by that. No, the main problem is the cost, the general cost of energy, and all the measures taken, you know, all these sanctions will raise the cost of energy to a considerable extent, and this will create a tremendous push toward deindustrialization of Europe and relocation of most of industries, either in United States or in other countries, like maybe Algeria or Morocco.
Okay, well, but Pai, I mean, the U.S. is aware of what it's doing to its great allies in Europe and their common cause with Ukraine. I mean, this is robbery, and the Europeans are going along with it. I mean, they're complaining a little, or they're pointing it out, gently pointing it out. But they put themselves into a straitjacket. Pai.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, the masses across Europe, as Jacques just intimated, are increasingly on the side of what essentially German industry pre-Merkel and even during Merkel were leaning towards the East. I mean, they're rational people, and they're also endangered now. This used to work as a lever, geopolitical lever, obviously, in decades past. In the mid-80s, the collusion between Washington and the Saudis and OPEC, essentially being run by London and New York and Swiss banks, would do things like tactically drop the price in order to torpedo the Soviet economy. It was that was a reprise of what had happened like roughly 10 years earlier against an obstinate Shah of Iran. who wanted to start to set his own path. So they torpedoed his, you know, when you tweak the oil price, you're able to do many things. This time, I think it's boomeranging. Why? Because a deep recession is imminent in the U.S., which will only worsen what the 08 financial crisis kicked off in the way of chronic unemployment and diminishing consumer returns. Again, right when the dollar is being challenged as world reserve currency. So Russia and China know what they're doing. They're repricing gold away from the corrupt London Bullion Market Association and New York COMEX while they're tying it to oil. All of this will grant fairer worldwide pricing for those monetary metals along with oil eventually, while taking weaponized economic hammers away from the U.S. Treasury Department, and not just against Russia or its allies, but against really anybody.
Well, Jacques, with the pressure on energy prices here, then prosperity in Europe essentially comes to an end because it was cheap, reliable energy that made that possible. They're not going to make up for it. They're not going to have any new technology to replace this, or at least anytime soon. I mean, politically, that is untenable. How much longer can this go on? Go ahead in Paris.
Well, we don't know. The basic fact is we don't know. It's absolutely sure that this will lead to an impoverishment of Europe. By the way, you know, even some kind of dumb politician like Charles Michel, with, of course, one of the leaders of the EU, has said that. Yes, of course, Europe is on its way to get impoverished. Now, the main problem is, will we be able to implement a kind of major restructuration of our economies and our industries, trying to capitalize on very high technologies, so to be able to lower the general cost, or maybe could, of course, depreciate the euro. But then we will run into a large conflict with the German opinion, public opinion. So, by the way, what is quite sure now is that this impoverishment of the EU will stay with us for at least 3 to 5 years. After that, that will depend, of course, of policies adopt, but I don't see right now any kind of policy which could get us up from this trap. And this is very, very disturbing.
Yeah, but Pai, this was all done intentionally. I mean, it's not like Russia is sanctioning Europe. Europe is sanctioning Russia, and this is the result here. This was a craven choice on the part of the West. Go ahead, Pai.
Yeah, but it's not the craven choice of the people. I mean,
Good point.
This is really kind of forcing the issue over who's in charge. And I don't mean just who's in charge of the European Union. I mean, hint, who was Macron's then and perhaps a perennial boss? But who is essentially transatlantically in charge dictating policies, regardless of how opaquely run or, clinically retarded they are. I mean, it's almost begging the question over a wider strategic aim at depopulation, 425 to 400 million, 450 million people across Europe. What are they anticipating being in order to deal with unserviceable debts and public obligations and pensions and everything to try and by what 2030 get it down to half of that? I mean, I know it sounds like extreme thinking, but when you're looking at who is dictating policies that are not popular to say the least, and will have very serious blowback unless there's just full blown war, it really begs the question over a wider agenda involving just completely remaking the European map. Not just geopolitically, but population-wise, and just the general makeup of what it is. So the deindustrialization at the least. I mean, I'm very concerned about what the European continent, whether you're a member of the EU or not. I mean, it's almost like a sacrificial lamb being set up in order to maintain the power structures of those that have been dictating essentially currency and monetary platforms for over a century now.
Yeah, but Jack, that is not sustainable over time, okay? I mean, there is still something called democracy, at least, a little bit of it left in Europe. I mean, people are going to start voting here. I mean, this is unsustainable.
Well, I'm not sure. You know, this kind of situation could perfectly be sustained either by reducing the level of democracy in all countries or by playing with internal divisions, you know. And right now, you have a lot of government which are, as a matter of fact, minority government. Look at Germany, look at France, of course. You know, Macron has less than 30% of voter at the first round, and it has been elected by default. And this is also true in a lot of other countries. So we could work with, we could do with a lot of I would say minoritarian government with a problem in suppressing some forth, some kind of demonstration, with reducing the level of democracy. And yes, in the end, this situation could be sustainable. This is the major tragedy, by the way. If this situation will not be sustainable, then there could be some kind of hope. We could say, yes, of course, people will react, and this will end into a major change of policy. But, well, I'm not very sure of that. And, of course, we could always be surprised. Look at what happened just in Iran right now. But, nevertheless, I think that the power in place have so much in hand on everything in the media, in different kind of way of suppressing dissenting opinions.
But Chuck, you can have differences of opinion, you know, rising populism, but Pai, having food and warmth, these are kind of basic things on a continent that got used to that, being rich, Pai.
Well, past this prologue. Go ahead, Jacques.
No, go ahead, Pai. Go ahead.
What Jacques was just mentioning just made me think that past this prologue, there are playbooks. Playbooks were tactically deployed with regard to stoking what happened in Ukraine in 2014 and since. And I sense that trend will be applied by the quote-unquote powers that be across the European continent, essentially restoking fascism just like 90 years ago. And for the same purposes, to take on a resurging Eastern Bloc, a Eurasian power that is unprecedented right now in every way. But you know, the fascism imminent will be stoked while blaming the hordes of mongrels or whatever the terms will be used from Asia, from the Southern Hemisphere, that are quote unquote looking to destroy our way of life. Expect a further disturbing Eastern pivot based on who's running things.
Well, and we all know who to blame, the elites that rule over us. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. Many thanks to my guests in Paris and in Los Angeles. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.